Accessibility Craft Podcast, where we explore the art of creating accessible websites while trying out interesting craft beverages. This podcast is brought to you by the team at Equalize Digital, a WordPress accessibility company and the proud creators of the Accessibility Checker plugin. And now, on to the show.
So now, of course, the main event, what everyone is here for, I'm going to add a spotlight to Carrie Fisher. She's a senior accessibility instructor and developer at DQ, and she's an author, a speaker. I follow her on Twitter, and she shares a ton of great information about UX, digital accessibility, diversity in tech. And I think you're also working on your PhD, right, Carrie?
Yeah, I'm busy. That's for sure.
So I am going to stop sharing my screen and I will let Carrie take over. I will be monitoring the chat. So if you have any questions, feel free to pop them into the chat and I will ask them to Carrie. Or I'm sure at the end, we'll also have a time if you feel more comfortable and you want to unmute, you can do that as well.
Yeah. Hi. Thanks so much, Amber. Thank you, everyone, for allowing me to come today to talk about some of the things that I like to talk about, digital accessibility in general. But I've kind of gotten into typography the past year or two, so I really kind of wanted to boil it down. And all the talks that I do and all the writing that I do, I think essentially at one point was for me, like notes so I don't forget or things that I wanted to learn about. And so I kind of do deep dives and then I try to parse it in a way that maybe is beneficial to some. Maybe there's a few takeaways. That being said, this is a very kind of informal conversation we can have. So if you want to pause, ask me a question, feel free. I'm not looking at the chat. I've got like too many screens going on here, but if you just kind of raise your hand, or Amber, if you want to call on people, that's fine too. Otherwise, I'll just kind of do my thing and have plenty of time to talk about it at the end. This is one talk that, again, accessible typography essentials. I'm going to try to describe things on the screen, but this is going to be pretty visual heavy throughout. So just kind of keeping that in mind, I'll try to explain it. We already saw a slide about me. There's me. I am certified for the IAAP. The CPWA is the, you know, that CPAC plus the WASP together. So, and then now there's a new one that I need to go out and get, but I haven't done that yet. I'm busy. I do work as a senior accessibility consultant at DQ, but I also work as a student and work in Iowa State University. I saw someone was from, I think, Des Moines in the chat. So hi to my fellow Iowan, even though I'm in Wisconsin. I feel like I can claim it a little bit. Anyway, I'm here to talk to you today about a big area where designers and front-end developers of any sort, content creators, editors, we can really kind of sink our teeth into. We have a really big impact whether our products are accessible or not, and that is typography. And I'm not a designer, I'll say that from the very beginning, but I am someone who was a front-end developer for 15 years, plus worked a lot with Drupal and WordPress and other frameworks, and learning about, you know, how best to, not only for me as a developer, but how do I integrate the designs from the designers? How do I think about the people editing and content creation? And, you know, it's a whole, you know, team that puts this together. It's not just one group. So just because you're a designer doesn't mean that you can't maybe learn something and apply it in the future. So typography, for anyone that's not, you know, thinks of it and maybe just as font families, that's kind of how I thought about it at the beginning, but it can include those typefaces. It can include the character styling, color contrast is in there, layout, spacing, kerning, just to name a few. There's a lot of different elements and it can feel overwhelming because there are so many elements, but I'm going to give you some basic takeaways. And I'm also going to do like some demos with a design because this is kind of a shorter meeting and we've already had a little bit of conversation. I don't know how much of my demo I'll be able to finish, but I can show you at least the beginning and the end part. All right. So This is one, again, the demo that I found is actually one that was created by somebody. It is viable and live in the world. And so what I did is I took it, I thought that it needed some tweaks when it came to accessibility. And then we'll kind of see that before and after. All right. Just double check in chat there. All right, so the first thing, color and contrast, if you are been around for any length of time and know anything about accessibility, you know that color contrast is really important. Those words, icons, graphical information, anything that is hard to discern, design can be quickly inaccessible. So what happens when you perceive color and contrast in a different way from others, right? So there are people with dyslexia, people with low vision, with obviously people who are blind, they don't see necessarily color and contrast, but a lot of people who are technically legally blind are in that low vision category, right? There's a little bit. We have color deficiencies. We have color deficiencies, 253 million people with low vision, 300 million people who have color blindness or just cannot see full color. So there's a lot of people that really are impacted by this. So, all right, so I'll do the color contrast takeaways and then we'll do the demo and we'll go back and forth. But so some of the things that I'm gonna be looking at in this design are the following. So the first one is that making sure that we have that text that has that small text that is that 14 point or smaller has that color contrast ratio of that 4.5 to one. That large text, of course, we have that 14 point bold or 18 point that has the contrast ratio of 3:1. These have been talked about changing in, you know, WCAG 3.0 and beyond. Maybe it'll eke its way into 2.2, but I doubt it. But for now, this is all that we have to really concern ourselves with when it comes to color and contrast, when it comes to text against background. So that ratio is a formula. It's talking about the text. It's talking about what's on the background, right? And sometimes that is like a hex on hex, which is pretty easy to solve. But you have also issues when you have text on top of a gradient or text on top of an image. And so there's different tools that you could utilize for that. The third part of that are the icons and essential images has that contrast ratio of 3:1. So again, essential meaning that if that icon disappeared, would it change the meaning of the page? For instance, my home website has icons as menu items. So they're like buttons. They have the right alternative text. They have all that. But they are standalone. There's no text next to them. And so if they disappear, they're essential. It changes the whole meaning of the page. So like you can't even find the buttons, right? So they are very essential. So they definitely fall under that 3:1. We have those solid color with the backgrounds help for readability. For the most part, you know, I think most people now it's not 1995 anymore. And we don't have text on top of a exciting background with all kinds of textures and things. And we're pretty good about that. One thing to think about though too is, and something I've learned in over the past few years talking with people and users that have color issues. And again, it could be people not even just on the color blindness spectrum, but people who get migraines or people who have certain visual disabilities like glaucoma. There's certain color combinations and that white, that really stark white is difficult even for them to see. So a lot of them will use that, you know, prefer the color contrast, the dark mode versus the light mode. If they have a dark mode option, some of them will go there. But even then, the white text on top of that black background. So there's a lot of user variables that we are contending with beyond, you know, just the ones that we need to do for WCAG and making sure that things are accessible. Of course, we don't want to rely on color alone to convey information. If I said something like press the red button if you don't want to do this, press the green button if you do want to do this, right? I am relying on color alone. If I can't see or differentiate between the red and the green, which again is a big problem with people with color blindness, then that might be difficult for me to convey what my yes or no, right? Ideally, we'd have words with it, we'd have other things, but again, the idea is that we're not using color alone to convey that information. And like I kind of already mentioned, those certain combinations, red, greens, shades of gray, some of those are really difficult for people to see. So we definitely want to make sure that we're thinking about inclusion when it comes to color. So I'm going to grab the, there we go. So this is Illustrator. This is a COVID-19 work from home flyer. This is one that I found that was on Adobe Spark. It's one of those template versioning things. You can go there and find all kinds of different templates for different things, depending on what you want to do. And so this is one that I found and I kind of took a look at it. I kind of made it, I will say, I made it probably a little bit worse than what I saw at the very beginning. But what we see here is, and if we're thinking about just color contrast at this point in this topography, is that we've got some potential issues with some of these colors. We have a icon with a, which is non-essential, it's decorative, I would say in this case, but we have a lady and she's got some different colors in her design. But what I'm really focusing on this one are the text. So I'm looking at this light blue against that teal. I'm looking at this text that is gray on top of the like tannish color, right? So kind of going on down the way. So you can see that one's pretty, pretty bad. So there's a lot of different color contrast tools that you can use. So the one that I'm going to use for this really quick demo is the Color Contrast Analyzer. If you're not familiar with it already, that's a TPGI tool that I love. I use it all the time in assessments. And it sounds funny to say I love the tool, but I really do love this tool because it's gotten me information that I would have never been able to get otherwise, at least in that accurate a way. Like there's different tools that I could probably, eyedropper type tools, but I like this one because I can also grab things that are not on the image or not, like right now I'm kind of grabbing different colors around my screen, right? So it's pretty phenomenal when it comes to text on top of gradients or text on top of images for sure. But in this case, let's say we have a design file. Maybe we don't have the AI, maybe we don't have the InDesign file, maybe we don't have the whatever file type that it is that you're looking at, and we can't get these hex values. I can take a tool like this and kind of approximate what it is. I get this question a lot too on these kinds of tools where it's kind of pixelated and you can see different variables. I pick usually a whatever straight line is that I can find or the straightest line I can find. That typically is the color that it is there. Kind of play around with that a little bit. I'm going to close these up a little. All right. So we have this foreground. We probably already knew this one was going to fail, right? We have that light pink on top of the kind of a salmon color. And right here, we have that contrast ratio 1.6 to 1. If we look here, if we forget what we're looking for, we're looking for that 4.5 to 1. If we decide that that is smaller text, or if we decide that it's larger text, we could do that 3 to 1. So it gives you a little bit of regulations there, tells you a little bit about that. What I also like about this one as well is that we can sync those color values and I can kind of play around, right? This one's gonna be pretty extreme. I'm gonna have to go a lot darker. Let's say we're gonna go 4.5 to one. And so it kind of changes completely changes the way that this page looks. So from a design point of view, this might not be the way that I want to go, right? So there's a lot of different beyond, you know, just being accessible and inclusive, this idea that you're going to have a lot of variability, a lot of choices. I think kind of stepping back one step and one thought process is that WCAG, right? If you're not familiar with that, you know, the Web Content Accessibility Guidelines, they're made for the digital space, but they really have the foundation is in the web, right? The word web is right in it, but it can be applied to different things. It can be applied to like native apps. You know, we have design, right? That's one example as well. So it's the kind of like, you know, and that's why 2.2 and 3.0 is gonna come about and talk about more emerging technologies and more design, more cognitive, and a lot of the things and more mobile, of course. A lot of the things that we didn't have to contend with when it first was developed. So design is one of those things, like there is not necessarily a straight, like this is how you do it. This is the WCAG, but there are definitely ones that touch. Color contrast is a huge example. We should, you know, all be aware of if we're not already. There are some checklists that I have found that have been really helpful, but again, There's not one that's specific to design. So some of this is going to be a little bit interpretation. Just one side note there.
This episode of Accessibility Craft is sponsored by Equalized Digital Accessibility Checker, the WordPress plugin that helps you find accessibility problems before you hit publish. Thousands of businesses, nonprofits, universities, and government agencies around the world trust Accessibility Checker to help their teams find, fix, and prevent accessibility problems on an ongoing basis. New to accessibility? Equalized Digital Accessibility Checker is here to teach you every step of the way. Whether you're a content creator or a developer, our detailed documentation guides you through fixing accessibility issues. Never lose track of accessibility again with real-time scans each time you save, powerful reports inside the WordPress dashboard, and a front-end view to help you track down hard-to-find issues. Scan unlimited posts and pages with Accessibility Checker free. Upgrade to Accessibility Checker Pro to scan your website in bulk, whether it has 10 pages or 10,000. Download Accessibility Checker today at equalizeddigital.com/accessibility-checker. Use coupon code ACCESSIBILITYCRAFT to save 10% on any plan.
So as I go through, I'm looking at all kinds of different things. One thing I want to kind of highlight real quick here, and I'm trying to be cognizant of time too, but we talk about, you know, when I do an assessment too, if I'm looking at this from a design perspective and I'm saying, okay, what am I measuring? When I see this is like a shadow, or you can have like a, you know, drop angle or whatever it is that you want to call it. But what I have to look at is the lightest part, because it's not an outline. If I outline this, if it had that full salmon, dark salmon color around the whole letter, the whole number here, I could pinpoint that one because it was, well, it's still not meeting the requirements, but I could have picked that one if that one was strong enough. And here I'll just kind of show real quick the fixed one. So in this case, well, you'll see in a little bit that we're going to change the background. But that's what I am doing here, because I'm going to pass no matter what color I pick, right? So this is for the large text only. So on this one, I'm going to pass. So kind of go down there, the other one. I'm kind of scrolled in a little bit farther, but this is the dark color that I changed for the text that was on the other one. So I'll kind of space out a little bit, blow it out a little bit more here. So the first part of this accessible design is I'm just really thinking about color, right? And there's a billion ways that you want to do it. I just kind of like break it down into these different categories of what do I want to focus on first, right? And so color is obviously an easy one, relatively easy, because there's a billion tools that are out there. We've got very clear ratios. We've got it smack dab in the middle of WCAG requirements, right? There's not a lot of like extension or gray area in this particular point. And of course, like I said, billions of tools. These are a couple of the ones that I really like. Adobe Color has got some really great accessibility tools beyond what you might already know. They have this one, let's see, down here under tools, I can go to, I'm at color.adobe.com. I am on the accessibility tools tab, and this is just a regular contrast checker, which isn't too exciting these days, but I can see this colorblind safe. And so here's one where I can see my palette with the different color disabilities that we have here. There's a lot more than that. And there's different like strong and weak and versions of this as well. But this kind of gives you a rough idea of how this palette might work. And so it can tell you what kind of issues we have. I can take it and drag my mouse. A friend of mine used this one with their keyboard and said it was pretty accessible. I have not tested that myself, so definitely check it out if you want to. But we can see how that deuteranopia, protanopia, and tritanopia, I probably said that wrong, but you'll see how these totally changed in this palette, for instance. If I went back to here, I can do this too. And all the tools, you know, all of these probably have their own kinds of things built in. I'm on a Mac OS, I can do this myself as well. Just from the OS, but you can see right here, that's the protanopia and then the deuteranopia. So different tools, different you know, whatever you're using for your designs, you're going to have different options. Plus on your operating system, you'll probably have a decent amount of options as well. But that gives you just like a really high level of what your design is going to look like. If you're thinking palettes, you know, this is going to be right up your alley as well. Tons of tools. Yeah, just a couple more I wanted to point out. If you're working with Figma, because so many people are, they do have an accessible color palettes already built in based on off the Leonardo, which is just fascinating. Gets into lots of charts and data and, like, you know, really the specs of why things are rated for those kind of particular ratios. And it's just kind of interesting if you're into that sort of thing. Now, also, if you're thinking about contrast grids, if you're thinking about palettes, a lot of palette generators out there as well. I like this one just because it's kind of nice. It's got this kind of grid pattern to it. You can modify what you want to do over here. I could just type into it, let's say, and this might be, you know, it doesn't even have to have the right word. So if I have like branding colors and it's called Midnight and it's just black, I can kind of go through here and I can see, you know, which ones are going to be passing for AAA, which ones are going to be passing for AA at 18 size. So the larger size, all the way down to does not pass. That's what the DNP is. So it's pretty fun. Alley Rocks is another one that I use a lot too. This is kind of the combination of palette. And then as you go down, it's going to tell you, you know, what is accessible. It's going to go from most to least. So there's a lot of different ways to kind of look at things. So definitely depending on what part of the design process you're in, or if you've got, you know, specific hex codes that you have to work with, or branding colors that you have to work with, these kind of give you a really high level view of what you know that you can work with. So that's kind of where that comes into play. So I said a lot about color and contrast because it is really important and there is no real gray area on that, but I just wanted to, I'll keep moving on about that because you've probably been there, done that.
We do have a couple of questions.
Oh, sure.
So two people were wondering, how close can you get to full white, the whole six Fs, without causing a problem for people with glaucoma?
Yeah, I think, well, see, the problem is that a lot of that's going to come down to usability and user preference, right? There's a lot of different, you know, like I might have glaucoma and be fine with white, or I might, you know, not have glaucoma and hate white, right? So it's this combination of like, how far can you push it, right? You're never going to know in that sense. So there's not like it says, people just say, you know, I have glaucoma and don't do, you know, this, you know, shade of white. So it's more about that variability amongst individuals, but also, you know, you don't have to go stark black. You don't have to go stark white. You can do something like a darker gray, a little bit of an ivory, right? So you can kind of look right here at some of the, again, it can model this whole thing. This is a straight white color and how sharp it is versus maybe let's go like a little bit lighter. Let's go in a little bit. So just by even kind of, well, that's probably like too far. That's kind of pinky beige. There we go. We're a little bit ivory. And so you can see that the curve kind of starts to be less severe when you've got these kind of more softer palettes. And so again, I can't tell you what's going to be perfect for glaucoma, but I can tell you that, you know, offering your users multiple choices, not going to the extremes on everything, obviously meeting those color contrast ratios are important, but you can be a little bit softer.
Can you explain, so you are moving around to pick a different color.
Sorry.
And what are the charts for people that are less familiar? What are the charts that are up on the screen and kind of what are you getting out of these?
So for me, I mean, there's a lot of different ways to look at this. These are just looking, so if you think about color contrast ratios as being a formula, like it's a pretty complex formula. Has luminosity, and I won't even try to explain it because I don't really understand it fully, but it's a formula and that's what they're all based off of, the color contrast ratios. So what this is showing is red, green, lightness, blue, yellow, lightness, and green, red, blue, yellow. So we have this kind of different combinations of colors and lightness. So you might, as an individual, you might know like what sets you off, right? You might be that red green combination that and the lightness that you don't like. And so you could look or build for specifically with that in mind, right? You could think about that. But honestly, like, I think most people who do have problems with that sort, like to the extreme, I'm going to bring over my preferences here. A lot of them will go into accessibility either on their Mac or their PC or maybe their Linux even. And there's a lot of different options for display. So if I know that I'm someone who, you know, doesn't like stark white, it either aggravates my disability or just it's too bright for me and I can't handle it, I can come in here and add some color filters as well. So I know some people do that. We do like a color tint. I won't do pink. That'd be pretty extreme, but let's do like kind of a grayish. That might be too dark now. All right, let's go there. Somehow I picked bright green. Hold on, too much going on here. Hold on, there we go. All right. Sorry about that. I don't know why I took that one. All right, so let's choose that color. Did not choose it. All right, there we go. Sorry, I'm sharing my screen. It's like going too slow here. All right, let's go there. I'll do it that way. It's not saving it. Ah. I think I'm sharing too much. It's like not going fast enough here. All right, let's see. Maybe I can.
It's okay. Here.
Yeah, it keeps changing the color. That's so weird. All right. So well, you can do the filters, right? So that's extreme. So what I have a filter on right now is red. I'm trying to show you like maybe a softer color, but it's not picking it up. Ah, there we go. Maybe something like that. So here might be an example where I would do something on the operating system level and not think about it. So I think about, I'll stop playing around with colors now because it's very delayed here. I'll turn that off. But I think about all of accessibility really being about, you know, making the best choices as designers and developers and whatever role we have, but then also allowing users to make certain choices. So there's going to be certain choices that I could make if you gave me a light mode and a dark mode, or there'll be certain choices that I can make on my own on the operating system, or I can have my own style sheets and override things. When it comes to design, though, you obviously have a lot less things that you can play with unless you do something like this where you do a complete color tint or like, right, versus like Windows high contrast mode where they're looking mostly at just like the text in the background. So if you're just thinking design-wise, then you don't have as many options there, so. I went down a rabbit hole.
Yeah, so Mark is wondering on that note, does hue play a role in?
Yes. So yeah, I mean, that's one thing here. I can get the color contrast formula. There we go. So there is, yeah. So there's a lot of different different articles about this, but I don't know if this is the one that I wanted, but they have this idea that you're looking for different things. So you have that luminance, which is, whoops, let's see, it's going so slow here. We have this luminance, we have the color contrast, we have the dynamic range, which is some of the things that we were talking about with the comparison, optical glare, color contrast ratio, human eye dynamic range. So there's all kinds of different things that you could really look into. I was looking for the actual formula. Ah, there we go. Relative luminance versus the L2 is the relative luminance of the darker of the colors and the lighter of the colors. So yeah, so it gets to be like super complex when it comes to ratios. Like I said, I can't even explain it. And I think it goes a little bit more than that, than this is what's saying. But here, I'll pop this in chat if anyone wants to read that one.
I think.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. No, and this is maybe not the best example. I just did that quick Google, but I've read a lot of different things on the WCAG specs about how it's calculated. And there's all these really interesting conversations about what's going to happen in the future, because we have this idea that what we have now might not even be enough, right? I mean, we're already pushing it. A lot of websites still don't have that. So the basic color contrast. So I don't even know how we're going to get it better, but you know, we're trying.
So I think we have one more question before. Sure. We'll let you go on. Dave asked, if users can fix the problem of full white in their settings, if they have glaucoma, would you say that that's something that a website doesn't actually need to worry about because they could have just done it at the OS level?
Yeah, I mean, so that's always the balance, I think, with anything with accessibility is that you're thinking about the scenarios and you're taking WCAG and you're taking all the different requirements that you might have internally and with your clients already telling you. Like you got to make your choices based on all that information. But at the end of the day, you know, there's over 7 billion people and we're all individuals. And the way I feel about white backgrounds today might be different than the way I feel about it in the middle of the day or at midnight, right? So it's this idea that within every individual that you have the variability as well as every individual has their own preferences, right? So you're never going to please everyone all of the time. I think the whole feeling to me about, you know, WCAG, the spirit of it and the spirit of being accessible and thinking about inclusivity within your designs or anything else you do is that you are trying to make the best judgment call based on the information that you have. And it may not be the perfect combination for every single individual that you encounter, but giving them options is first and foremost, first following rules, second giving them options, but then also allowing them a way to override that, right? And being able to choose their own adventure. So it's all the things, right? So I think that's why accessibility is both interesting and can be frustrating for some people. So yeah, so that's a long-winded way of saying, try your best to accommodate the people that you know might already have issues with that. And then, you know, allow them to either make a choice, like maybe dark mode, or you give them the choice of, you know, the operating system options, right? So, yeah. I don't know if that answered your question, but it's kind of my quick and dirty philosophy.
I think it's a good one. Try and do the best you can, and then hopefully they'll have tools as well.
Yeah, I'm listening to feedback is always crucial too. So that is part of it too. Having a dialogue with your users is critical. Awesome. There's a lot to talk about with color and contrast, but I definitely want to make sure highlight a few of the different typefaces and styling and some of the other things, because I think that once we get that color and contrast in place, and we can talk, like I said, we can have a whole trainings on just color, but this idea that typography goes beyond that color and contrast. Color and contrast in some ways is fairly easy to meet if you're just thinking WCAG, right? It's a ratio, you pop in hex values, use a little dropper and figure out, you know, the gradients or the image, right? And then you move on. Whereas typefaces and styling can get a little bit more complex and not necessarily always have something concrete, right? So one of the things that we talk about a lot are fonts. Like people are saying, you know, font families, like what should I be using? And I wrote here, you know, using common font families like our Arial, Open Sans, whenever possible. There's lots of really interesting studies talking about the accessibility of certain font faces, and dyslexia is one of the, there's a dyslexic font that's specific for dyslexic people, right? And then you have all these ones that are specific. There's one for autism that's specific for these people. We've always heard that papyrus and Comic Sans, you know, are really good, right? So it's this the concept of, obviously there's an individual part of it, but the research has shown that that's not necessarily true, that it's not necessarily like the font for my specific disability is going to be the one that is the best for me. In fact, what the research has seen is that common fonts are better for the most part, because when I've already looked at Arial, I've already seen Open Sans a billion times. Cognitively, I've already figured out, you know, how to read it essentially, or like how to map it in my brain. It's not a conscious thing. It's like what you do because you encounter it so often that you learn how to work with it or around it. So this concept of just using common fonts, it doesn't have to be Arial or Open Sans, but those are two examples of common fonts. It's really fascinating research, and there's definitely not enough that's out there. But so far, that's what we're hearing. Even that whole debate of serif versus sans serif, it doesn't matter if you are thinking about in terms of common fonts, right? So we'll talk a little bit more about what that means. So avoiding the specialty typefaces that target certain disabilities. Again, it's not that you couldn't use it. I've actually used it on a site before with it as a toggle, right? And so I've given my user a choice. So I haven't given it to everyone. Maybe the down or the standard one would be Arial. And if they wanted to toggle for that particular font, they could, right? So giving them choices. But I think number three is the most important though. Of if you're not even thinking about one, you're not even thinking about two, go just straight to three. So three is making sure that you pick a typeface that has unique characteristics. And what we mean by that is when I put a P in front of a mirror, does it look like a Q? If I put a B in front of a mirror, does it look like the mirror opposite look like the D, right? So there's, you need to have like these unique identifiers that stand, make these letters stand out. And there's a whole gamut besides the BDs and the PQs that we'll definitely talk about. But having that minimum copy needs 14 point larger if we can. And making sure we limit the number of typeface variations increases readability. It's kind of the same concept of not overwhelming people with too much information. Don't overwhelm people with too many fonts. And this idea that you're also adding things like avoiding things like only color, all caps, italic, and such to emphasize a word. Excuse me. So I was kind of talking a lot about that, but there's like a lot of different ones that a lot of different fonts, and I'll show you this example again. We have different options here for fonts. When we look at this, we're going to know that it is not the font that we necessarily want. Let's see what we get. All right, so in this particular case, this is the name of the font, titular book italic. So there's a lot of different things that we can talk about with this font for, in particular. The first thing, of course, you know, it's italicized. It's a little bit more difficult to read. Color contrast aside, this font, what I have here, let's see if we go. Let's see. So right now I'm on Adobe font and you don't have to go to Adobe and go to different ones like it, but it's the idea that I can see all the font families. I just looked up the one that I'm using in the flyer. The default sample text is the quick down, brown dog jumps over the lazy dog. It shows all the different letter. But what I want to see are the characteristics that I kind of mentioned before. It's called a chirality. So if I put a B in front of a mirror, let's do D. Are they exactly the same, right? And that might be a little hard to see. But in this particular case, we have some unique variability. We have this little serif, right? That's a little bit different than that B. So the D is unique from the B, but that's not the only one we want to look at. We want to look at that Q and that P. We want to look at the N and the U. Sometimes people do M and W's. We're going to look at the number one, the lowercase L, and the uppercase I. And we're also going to look at zero versus capital O. Right, I'm gonna slide in a little bit closer here. So again, the idea of chirality, if I look at that Q and I look at that P pairing, they are exactly the same. So I know that, you know, why is the B and the D are distinct, right? The P and the Q are not. The N and the U are distinct, that you've got a little bit more of a serif. Our M and W are great. Our number one, our lowercase L, our uppercase I, our zero, and our uppercase O are unique. So those are, I mean, this is a pretty decent font. This one is the issue right here. But we might want to pick one that's a little bit more common, right? So we might want to go with an Arial, or we might want to do something that's different. What I do typically, if I know I'm working with a font and a design, and I kind of want to stay true to that design, I'll go up to the recommendations, because what it'll do is first tell you the fonts that are like it. And so I might come in here and I say, okay, I'm going to look at, you know, do the same kind of concept where I'm going to kind of look at Champagne Sorbet, which is an awesome name for a font. And I might go in here and do the same thing and just kind of compare the different ones. Just a quick, and because we know we're running out of time, that Google Foundry has a lot of accessible fonts in and of itself. So these are all the fonts that Adobe has, but there's specific ones that are from Google that are actually pretty good when it comes to accessibility. We'll go back down a couple. So what I'm really doing when I'm thinking about fonts is this is not a, here's the link real quick if you want to grab that one too. It's this idea that you're not just thinking, okay, WCAG and checking boxes, right? You're really kind of having to think like, this is the design and this is the aesthetics that I want to kind of stay to. I know people like common fonts. I know people, you know, don't want to be overwhelmed with a lot. We want to make sure its typeface has certain characteristics that stand them apart from each other. So this is when I think it becomes a little bit more complex, even from color, right? Color in and of itself is a lot. We add that the typeface and the styling, and it becomes, you know, another thing, right, to think about. So again, it's not going to ever be, I don't think, in an accessibility world is perfect. There's no such thing. But the same kind of basic things that we talked about with color, I think apply here, where you're going to kind of look at these kind of takeaways and you're going to say, okay, I'm going to check as many boxes as possible. But then maybe I am giving somebody an alternative style, like in the case of that JavaScript button that you just can toggle on and off different fonts if you wanted to. But I think what most people do with this one's tricky, right? So this is not just a hex color. I can't just throw a variable on top and like all of a sudden everything's filtered the way I want it to. If it's baked in, there's nothing I can do about it. So definitely not baking in things into images, for instance, text on images. But that concept that you're also allowing people to add their own style sheet to like your website, for instance, that's one way that sometimes people can get around it, making sure that that's not locked down. Some organizations lock that down pretty hard where I can't apply my own style sheet. So there's some different things that you can do about this, but I think this one really falls into the lap of, you know, the designer or the front end developer, whoever's making the font choices and the font styling choices. So this one's a little bit more tricky, I think, than color.
There are a couple of questions about fonts. Let's see. I'm going to start from the bottom and go back up. Dave wanted to know, do you know of any WebSafe font with better legibility than Verdana? I need a WebSafe font that makes a capital I, lowercase l, and the number one look significantly different from each other.
Yeah, and I saw Dave's comment earlier about Arial and the capital I, lowercase l, and those looking nearly identical. And I think that's a tricky one, right? Because Arial is used so many places. Verdana is used every place as well. You know, it's like all these things, like, again, somebody who's encountered this hundreds and thousands of times subconsciously has learned how to read with that text, even if it doesn't meet all of this criteria. That's why that number one is there. And this idea that the research shows that if you're picking something that people have seen all the time, they already know how to work with it, right? And so this idea that you wouldn't necessarily, you could choose one of those, even though it's not maybe perfect on that the case of that unique characteristics, which is number three. This is why it gets really tricky, right? So I'm going to put that Verdana up there and let's see what we get. Oh, I don't even have it. It's too common, right?
Yeah, it's not on Adobe.
Yeah, I'm not seeing it on there. But that's one thing that I would look at. I would look at different foundries. I'd look at different fonts. Like, this is not something that's probably going to be super fast, especially if you're building the design. Like, let's say you're building a new website and you've got all these hex values you got to deal with, then your palettes and your fonts and the types and, you know, the H1s through the H6s and all that. This might be one of those things that might take you a little bit more time to like sit through and think about, but, you know, kind of taking your time. But once you figure that out, then you can take that and kind of go with it. Like I said, the Adobe or the Google Foundry has a lot of an accessible fonts are free to use, and the type is accessible for a lot of them. So I wouldn't say all of them are 100%, but
I'm curious if you have
the place to go.
Mm-hmm. I'm curious if you have thoughts on serif first in serif. One of the talks that I found really interesting at AxCon last year, which if people aren't familiar with, mm-hmm. it's a free accessibility conference that DQ puts on, was I'm forgetting right now who it was, but they had done a bunch of research into fonts. And I remember one of the things that stuck out for me was they were talking about when you have serifs and letters, like if you put an R next to an N, it will look like an yes. N to a lot of people. Yeah. And so I'm curious if you have thoughts on that, because I've sort of been leaning towards doing all sans serif after attending that talk.
Yeah, no, so what you're talking about is called kerning, and it's when you have a certain number of or certain space between certain letters. And so the word, I always think of it like the word barn, B-A-R-N, could turn into ban for some people because of the way that it kind of the kerning and how close it is. So depending on, you know, their vision, their low vision, if they have dyslexia or if they have other sort of reading disability, they might discern it in different ways. So I think that jumping kind of straight into that, here we go. I'll go ahead and pop all those. But this is kind of where this kind of comes into, is that letter spacing being, you know, a certain size, word spacing a certain size, line height, paragraph spacing, all of these things, those are all straight from WCAG. The problem is that some of these are not requirements at the AA level. And so some people either A, don't know they exist, or B, don't want to pretend that they don't exist. So this really kind of jumping ahead a little bit, because I know we're running out of time, is that idea that, you know, you're going to have these particular spacing options. And there's two tools that I wanted to show on that one, which is called the Good Line Height. I'll show you that one in a second, and the golden ratio calculator. So some of these will help with that kerning conversation as well. So this one obviously is more about the height. And so this is talking about, you know, I type in whatever font size I want, the multiplier. So if I go back here, I think I need the 1.5, let's see, yeah, 1.5 times. So I'm going to go up to 1.5, right? And then I am going to do that grid row height. Again, you know, less is more is less, I don't know. So this idea that we can play around with this, we can hide the grid as well. And we can find something that's just perfect for the font that we've chosen. And it tells me right here, my good line height is 63. So if I know my multiplier is 1.5, I know what my key font size is, and can estimate some of these things like the row height, it can tell me what line height I want, right? So it's, again, you don't have to go this far down the rabbit hole on every single time, but going back to, you know, like what, somebody just told me to go longer. Sorry about that. What Dave was saying earlier is this concept of, you know, I'm choosing one thing. You know, how do I make the perfect typography choice for this particular case? And right, there's all these different factors, and line height is another consideration that you're thinking of. The golden ratio calculator is a little bit, I want to see if I can find the Veranda one. There we go. All right, it's on this one. Let's do a font size of 16 and a content width. Well, we know if we go back here again, our content width, we don't want to exceed 80 characters. So we'll go back to there and put in content width of 80. And now we're going to look at the golden ratio typography calculator. Show me. It's thinking. Ah. All right. So it's not, I'm going to refresh it real quick. I don't know why it's being silly. I think it's a live demo. Let's see. Maybe I need to increase my content width. Let's change it. Huh. Oh, I know. I think it's because I have the blocker on. Oh, let me see if I can do this. Add blocker. Let's try it again. Man, sorry about that. I'm all excited. It's still not working. All right. So I'm not really sure why it's not working for me today, except for everything else seems to be slow. I might be sharing too much going on here. I'm gonna try it on Firefox if it can load real quick. Everything's super sluggish. Sorry about that. Let's see. Might be the font. We'll see that too. Huh. All right. Well, that's a tool I used to use all the time. So now I don't know why it's not working, but what it usually shows you is this, the math, right? The math behind the golden calc ratio. This is where it gets like super complex. But it talks about, you know, the line height goes back to line height as well, but also talks about that spacing unit and topographic, typographic scale, which is, you know, part of that is the kerning and related to the font size. So I hope somebody else can get this to work. I don't really know why it didn't work. It just did like 5 minutes ago, but
this being a WordPress meetup, we can all appreciate that this is a WordPress site. And in the console, there is an admin ajax.php error. So maybe
if anyone wants to go fix it,
one of our developers in attendance today and be like, hey, you need some help fixing your site?
Yeah, I literally used it not that long ago. So maybe they did upgrade and had some
a
issues.
A bug
there,
that they didn't catch. Yeah.
But normally, I'll see if I can find an alternative for this one too, because I really liked it because it did talk essentially about the thing that you were just talking about, Amber, where it's about the kerning and how do you know these things, right? And so I think that's the tricky part about topography in general for accessibility is that there's some clear rules, color contrast, we have this letter spacing, right? But then we have this question of like, how do I measure that? What tool do I use? What tool do I use now that my golden ratio calculator is broken, right? This is concept of your, you can do this within, you know, your design programs as well. So it's not like I'm completely gone, but there's a lot to think about. There's a lot to be considering. There's a lot of different things. The other ones that I didn't mention here is making sure that we're using elements like headings to break up sections. We're using visual elements, list numbers, quotations. Even design spaces, I'm going to go back to that demo since we have a couple more minutes and kind of show you how I kind of parse them together. I can show you the before and after. We also have that 80 characters per paragraph line. If you're talking about characters like Japanese characters, then or any of those you know, that are more scripted, those are exceeding 40, right? Again, these are straight WCAG. And then we have that line hyphen letter spacing that we talked about. The other thing is that rivers of space, which I think is kind of fascinating too. Let me grab that on here. But what a river of space happens is when you have justified text. I think this one's justified. And so you've got these kinds of spaces where the eye can go because it's justified instead of left align. Or in cases right align, here's a better kind of example here where it can be difficult to read. Sometimes people with reading disabilities will jump lines because they don't really know where they are on the page. So these rivers of space can be very distracting as well for people with attention deficit disorder. So they're kind of like not very good at all. So there's a lot of different things to think about with that one. I'm gonna go ahead and share two of them at the same time. Scroll out a little bit. So here we go. So what I'm showing on the left, let's kind of scroll out a little bit more. Whoops, a little maybe in. There we go. All right. So the one on the left is the original. And it's, like I said, I made it a little bit worse. So don't blame Adobe for that. But Spark, anyone can put anything up there, inaccessible to accessible. And then the one on the right, we have modified, obviously, the color contrast that should be like jumping right out at you. We've changed the fonts from something that's too unique to something a little bit more straightforward, a little darker, obviously, to stand out as well. On this one, we also had like three or four different font families. So we changed it over here to having like two, one for the bigger letters and numbers and one for the copy. Right over here, we didn't have bullets. Over here, we've added bullets. Obviously, the white space has totally changed, but I've also added this element, this design element to it to kind of rope these together. Because again, part of that layout is putting like things together as well. So you can do that in a lot of different ways, and it's not awful over here, but this definitely brings it back and a little bit more obvious on, you know, keeping it together. So it's this concept that we didn't do a lot, really. I mean, if you think about justification, I also changed that, but otherwise that's a handful of things that we've changed. And it's kind of a night and day kind of situation where one is a lot more, is easier to read. Maybe, again, design aside, because I didn't design it, but design aside, if you're thinking about just, you know, is it more accessible? Is it more inclusive? Can I read it? Do I understand it? Does it make sense, right? This one, I would argue, is probably a little bit better than what we started with. So that was the quick and dirty there at the end, just because of timing. But if there's any more questions on that, definitely find me on my socials, on Twitter and LinkedIn and all that sort of thing. Yeah, and then check it out, and I can stick around for more questions. So, yeah.
Awesome. Thank you so much. And we do have our captioners until 8:30. So
okay,
that works for you. There
I want to be
more questions.
Yeah, so. Considerate of time. Yeah.
So Dave was wondering, why do newspapers write why do they use justified text when it still causes the same rivers of white space problem in print?
I'm not really sure. I don't know if all of them do, but I know that it's, you know, maybe it's like something historic, maybe it's something with the block lettering and the way that they used to have to do printing presses possibly, but a lot of the digital copies don't have that, I've noticed, but yeah, unfortunately, not everyone's got the memo about accessibility and inclusive typography, so unfortunately.
Yeah, Jean said full justifications for columns make the columns more distinct, which mm-hmm. might come into play, right? When you're reading something that might have 16 columns across it and you're trying to track just in the one column. So it's definitely a different situation than web, right?
Yeah, I mean, possibly. That's a good point. I don't know as much about print as I do about web, but I just know that those regulations that we have for WCAG, they're very specific about the characters per line, and specifically because of people with disabilities, that ADHD, people with other cognitive disabilities, people with dyslexia, right? They can just jump around to the next line or skip lines. I mean, low vision, right? So you could think of different scenarios for all of these different things. And again, these are all just kind of guidelines. And again, maybe your user, your preference with that, as somebody with that disability type, might be that you like having it full width and not justified or floated to the left or floated to the right, that you maybe prefer it, right? So this concept of, again, uniqueness and everyone's special.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so Mark said, great presentation. I guess this is the chicken or egg question, but when making a design decision, what comes first, color or font?
Yeah, chicken and egg for sure. I don't know. I think I would go font first, and I'm a big color person too, so that's hard for me to admit, but I feel like everything builds off of that. Once you get the font family in place, you can really kind of build off of that. Some things just naturally go with certain colors. I don't know if that makes any sense either, but yeah, I don't know that you'd have to do one before the other. They're kind of their own thing. But there's a lot more to think about with fonts. So I guess with color, it's more fun to me. And that's something that, you know, you've got a lot of guidance already. So in some ways it's easy, but the caveat to that, and I've worked with different clients over the years, is that when you have inaccessible colors that are brand colors, right, then it becomes a completely different can of fish, and definitely something to think about. So it depends on if you're building this just for your fun site, you know, you're doing a meetup site, right, website, or if you have a client and you have very specific things and parameters that you have to work within. So yeah, that's a good question.
Do you have any advice for talking to clients about their brand colors and encouraging them to select alternate web versions or something. I mean, honestly, I guess they need good color contrasts in their print brochures too. So what advice do you have on that?
So I had, there's a fellow, and some of you who are in the accessibility world or know a little bit, his name is Nick Steenhout, and he speaks about mostly accessibility in JavaScript, but all kinds of different things. But I still remember this. I told him I use this story, so we've got permission. But this idea that he once had a client and they were very adamant that their brand color could not change. Doesn't matter that it was inaccessible, like we're never going to change this, hasn't changed in hundreds of years, whatever. So he brings two different laptops to the presentation, and one is an accessible version of their color and one is inaccessible, their normal hex value. And he says, okay, pick which one is your color, right? And he said it was pretty split. People didn't really know because you have the variance between devices and how bright my device is. And obviously you have glare and other environmental factors that to consider. But in this scenario, they couldn't decipher which was their color, which one was. So it was like this whole, that's how he won the argument. And I kind of keep that one in the back pocket in case I ever get a client that is that has their heels dug into the sand a little bit. But it's that concept that, again, there's so much variability that even, you know, the small change that's going to help somebody and it looks exactly like it does on this other screen. So anyway, Nick Steenhout tells the story better, but I always think about that story when I think about clients who may be resistant to change, that, you know, it might be that it's not that big of a deal and maybe that change isn't, you know, the end of the world. And that just having it a little bit darker helps so many more people and get so many more clients and users or whatever it is that they're doing on that site, gets more people involved because they can actually, you know, read the text. Like you'd think that'd be a good thing, but everybody's different.
Yeah. I appreciate that story. Like it made me think of something which I've never thought about before, but I permanently have the blue light filter on my phone. Like I never turn it off. And I did occasionally, I realized, oh, I was Instagram. I was like editing my Instagram photos with the blue light filter on. And I'd look at them on my computer. And I'd be like, why does this look so bad? And then I realized, oh, okay, I got to turn it off just if I'm going to like edit a photo. Right. But that's the thing, like people, no one's going to see the colors exactly as they are. Right. But it definitely is harder if it's, cause we have this with our main or our original brand before we started Equalize Digital, was we had colors that were bright. It was like light green, right? Like a lime green color and a gray. And it was just like, no.
I think there are some clients
where their colors, it's not just a little darker, right? Like the one you were showing where you're shifting it and it has to go really dark and it's a whole different color now, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's a good point. There's certain ones like in the spectrum, like if you think about the rainbow, right? You have the warmer colors, like the yellows and the reds, maybe some of the like edging here on the purples and the greens here, but these are tricky because the extreme, which is white and black, right? They're too much in the middle. So they don't, right? There's nothing that will contrast with them, right? You can do like orange and black, right? But there's not a lot of like brown in there that, right? Or the reverse that happens as well. So it's, the warm colors are super tricky. Yellow, I think is like the trickiest, but like you said, the light green, I could see that being an issue as well because of those extremes. They're not there. They're too close, right? They're too close to the middle.
Yeah. Shifting back to type boundaries, Joe asked if there were any type boundaries, either Adobe or Google, that have stated, like they label fonts as accessibility friendly.
Yeah, and Google says that they all are. I just know that they're not because I've done, I mean, you can look right here, it's cursive. These are all capitals, right? But it's that idea that there are certain ones that say that they're more accessible than others, but I never trust. That's bad. I don't trust anyone. So I always kind of test my own with those, that example, the BDQP1LI0O and N, U, and M, and W. Those are kind of like my go-to letter combinations that I'm checking. And everyone's different. There's also different ones with numbers and letters. The eight kind of comes into play in some of these as well, but like that's difficult to read for me. So I think you just kind of get a feel for it after a while. This one's kind of an interesting one. I can already tell that this one's pretty accessible. Just kind of looking at it quickly. Allegria, maybe. All right. And it also depends on what you're picking. You don't want to pick the italic if you can choose, right? You don't want the super, super thin or probably the super, super heavy as well, the black or the bolds. But you can see right here, whoops, I lost my letters here. Should have just saved them. Let's go QPDB. I'll just do a few of them. But the one, the L, or the L and the I, there you go. So I could already tell on the other page, let's kind of scroll on a little bit here. We have these, the different ascenders and the serifs that are slightly different. We've got the little kind of tail that's going on there. See how that one's floating this way? So when I float the B, if I flip it, that's actually going to be facing the opposite way, right? These are kind of close, but you can tell this has got a heavier weight here and there, right? And here's our one. I mean, that's kind of squatty. There's our L and then there's I, but they're very unique, right? They all have their own unique little serifs and like weights and different, there's all kinds of words for all of these different little things that they've added. But what I'm really thinking about is just that chirality. So I always put a mirror in between and I say, okay, is this the opposite essentially if I put this in the mirror? And you can see that these are unique a little bit more than some of the other fonts that we were looking at earlier.
Yeah, this one's a great example. Okay, so there's a question, and this is sort of shifting gears, but do you know, Is there some reason why the part of the URL after the .com or .org does not have to meet the text color contrast requirements in a web browser address bar? So for example, looking at your browser right now, The subpages or subdirectories, right? /foundry/Google is not
why. Oh, yeah, it's great.
Do you know anything about that?
I've not heard anything about that before. That's kind of unique. I've seen that, but I've never really thought that deeply about it. But yeah, I wonder if that's a Chrome thing versus like a Firefox thing. I'll throw that one up. No, that's also, I wonder if IE does it better. I don't know. Maybe I'll get a browser war going on. But no, I'm not really sure. Maybe it falls out of that scope. It goes into, that's a hard thing about, you know, web, right? You've got all the things, right, that you have, plus you have your operating system, plus we have these browser wrapper things as well, you know. So it's like there's so many players, and sometimes, like for instance, focus indicators, if I'm relying on the browser to create the focus indicator for me, like the color, and you know, as I tab through the page, it's on them to get it right. Right. So if someone came back and said, oh, your site's, you know, it's not accessible. I can't see the focus indicator, but I have not created my own and I've not blocked the browser's focus indicator, but I have allowed the browser to do it, but it's still not meeting the color contrast ratio. It falls back on them. If you're talking about, you know, who's responsible, there's another rabbit hole to go down to. But it's, again, I guess another variable that you're considering when you're thinking about the overall inclusivity of your site. There's a lot of factors in play.
Yeah. So Rashmi asked, I hope I said that right. Rashmi asked, can you suggest how we should check the color contrast if there's some aliasing in their letters?
Are you talking about, like what we did earlier with the color contrast analyzer, where I'm trying to get to, here, I'll kind of show it. This might not show up very well, but you've got
there's
this gray.
Like lighter gray and a black. Yeah.
And that's what I was I quickly said it when we were talking about earlier. What I always measure is like a straightest line I can. That's what I find. So I find the darkest, straightest line. So you can see there's certain letters like the C and the E and anything with like curves to it, essentially, they're going to be a little bit more difficult. This is a pretty thick font so I can catch something pretty easily. But you have really thin fonts too. Here, maybe I'll try this guy over here, where they're super tricky. Yeah, so I've got like one pixel that I can choose from here. So that to me is a little bit more tricky. And we're using black right now, so that's easy versus like some of the colors that we were testing for earlier. But like this X, right? Do you see how like I have these different variations of gray? What I'm really looking for is that one, if I can't get the hex color, right? If I can't figure out what it is programmatically, then I am trying, like I said, to find the straightest line I can, or the thickest, straightest line I can to compare it to. I don't know if that helps, if that's what you're asking about, but I've had a lot of issues on client sites where I'm trying to pick apart like one pixel width kind of things. And it's like, okay, where does this fall? But it, you know, it's like anything, it's that reasonable doubt, right? I'm not going to fail something just to fail it. I'm going to maybe suggest you bump up something if it's on that border, right? Or if it's something like that, it's very thin. I would suggest you to make a little bit thicker, meatier font choice maybe, but it's this idea that, you know, I think accessibility professionals get a bad rap. I don't think we try to fail everything. I think maybe some of us do, but I don't. I like to think about practicality, right? So it's the idea that you're pretty close, then we'll just kind of maybe edge it up a little bit, but otherwise I'm not going to fail, but yeah.
Do you ever recommend like a handwritten font like that one?
They suggest not to, because it is difficult to read for a lot of people. Let alone, I'm thinking like even the younger generations that aren't even learning cursive, they might have a really hard time with that. But other people might as well. I have difficulty reading cursive. To me, it's the words are too close together. I can't really decipher sometimes. That's when kerning definitely comes into play.
Mm-hmm. Art mentioned, and I don't know this, so I don't know if you know anything, or Art, feel free to add more information in the chat. The target story is pretty compelling for accessibility in general, and I'm not familiar with the target story. But feel free to add more on that, Art.
Oh yeah, please do. I know that they had some litigation in the past, but they've turned it around and really become, you know, a leader in that space.
Mm-hmm. And then Jean asked, Art said Target was the first business sued over the ADA. So the Americans with Disabilities Act.
Yeah. It's complicated, but the long and short of it is the ones that we know that went to public litigation, and there's that's all another can of worms, but I'll just not say anything more. I'm going to get myself in trouble, lawsuits.
Jean was asking if you know, for columns in WordPress, do assistive devices mm-hmm. read top to bottom of the first column and then top of the second? Is there a minimum space between columns for accessibility if you have columns of tests or paragraphs?
Mm-hmm. There is. Let's see what it says. There you go. Paragraph spacing is 2 times. So that could be in between the paragraphs if you had one on top of each other or them right next to each other. I find that I always want a little bit more even than that 2 times. So what they're talking about, so if I know the typeface size, like let's say 16 points, right? And then, or pixels or whatever it is that you're building in, then you'd want to double that in between the paragraphs and no matter which direction that you're going. So I think that might be the question. Maybe hopefully I answered that one, but that's 100% with CAG.
So in that example, that would mean if it was a 16 pixel paragraph, you would need to have 32 pixels of space below the paragraph and to the left or right if there was another paragraph to the side of it.
Correct. I mean, the way that we do fonts with, you know, rems and ms and percentages and base fonts and all that, it can get a little bit more complex if you're talking about web versus design, right? So that you definitely want to make sure you're measuring the correct thing. But yeah, that's the recommended.
I can tell you right now, I 100% do not put enough space after my paragraphs if that's the case.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing about all of this, you know, in accessibility, it's a moving target. There's a lot to know. I don't know everything. There's nobody out there that knows all the things. There's differently, as you know, when I first started in development, I was full stack, right? And then that quickly became, you know, front end development. And then that became accessibility. But even within accessibility, there's so many experts on different things. So it's like, then, you know, maybe I'll put myself in the SVG category, right? So maybe I can say that, but that's the only topic. And I know little things here and there, but it's this idea that you can know a lot about one topic, but then you can know, you know, be the expert at something even more nuanced. So I feel like people think, oh, digital accessibility, I know how to do that. And it's, you know, it's really easy and it's just this. And it's like, well, actually, when you get into it, it gets a little bit even more
so much nuance. Fine-grained.
There's so much nuance. Yeah. I mean, you know that from WordPress. I mean, that's the same kind of concept, even just, and within the variability within just one particular CMS could be completely different from a different CMS, even though they're both CMSs, right? Or frameworks or whatever it is. So there's a lot of interesting. Sure.
I don't know if you have a follow-up. Rashmi just followed up and said, thanks for the answer. Do you know of any blog posts or articles regarding aliasing and how to measure contrast or anything that writes about any writing about that?
Not off the top of my head, but I can definitely look into it and see if I can see anything else. I can send that to you, Amber, if I find anything.
Yeah, we can. So we always have the recording and we put links that were mentioned in the chat or as follow-up. So if you send that to me, we can include that with the recording. And then I think this is probably going to be our last question. Do you have an opinion on Verdana versus Tahoma? Very specific questions we'll put you on the spot with.
All right. So this is what I would do. If you said something like that to me, I would go and I would find these fonts, right? And I would pop them in there and I would do just exactly that. I'd look at the sample text. I'd look at all the different things because there's so many variations amongst, you know, even within like the weight or, you know, italics, if you know you're going to have to use italics, and probably good to at least check it, right? And so that's what I would do. I'd have multiple tabs up and sometimes like I'd put them on my screen, just like across the screen, and then like comparing them. Not only that, but I'm looking at letter spacing and kerning, and I'm thinking about the use of them. And then all of them, they usually have also these, you know, fonts that are like this, but they also have these ones that they recommend that go with them too. So if I go down, just go straight to recommendation. We have the ones that are just like them or similar to them. And then you have the pairing. So for me, it's not like one versus the other. And like this one wins hands down, because sometimes it has to be with, you know, how am I using this? Is this the heading? Is this going to be like all the large font? Who's it going to be paired with? How many fonts are we talking about? What kind of use case? So it's not always, you know, black and white. But if I would do the very first thing I would do, just pop in those letters and check for the chirality, making sure that each letter is unique. That's kind of my first step, but there's a little bit more to it, than that, I think.
But yeah, no, I mean, it really is. It's just comparing them and really looking at the granular details and thinking about where it's going to be used and how big it will be or how small.
Context. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much. This has been fabulous. Do you want to put up again real quick how people can get a hold of you, or just if you want to tell us right now in case anyone wants to follow up?
I just stopped sharing. All right. Let's go back to that last slide. So you can find me on different places, but Twitter, Carrie Fisher with one R, same with LinkedIn. And you can check out my website. That's my blog site, and it has both the light and dark mode and prefers reduced motion. See, and it's kind of fun. It's like kind of funky and crazy there, but it's kind of showing you that you can build something a little bit unique, but also it's accessible. So yeah, you can take a look at it.
Great.
It was fun. It was an excuse to have fun.
Yeah, that's always awesome. And I love examples of websites that are accessible and still look fun and cool, because I think sometimes people who are less familiar think that it means it's going to be black and white and super boring. So
true. Very true.
Well, yeah. Thank you so
thank
much.
You again.
This has been a great presentation. We really appreciate it. Thanks again to Empower Caption Solutions and WP Engine for sponsoring. And our next meetup will be the first Thursday in February, which I think is the third. I don't have my notes up, but you can find it on our meetup page or on equalizeddigital.com/meetup. Thanks, everybody, and I hope you have a great night.
Thanks for listening to Accessibility Craft. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe in your podcast app to get notified when future episodes release. You can find Accessibility Craft on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and more. And if building accessibility awareness is important to you, please consider rating Accessibility Craft 5 stars on Apple Podcasts. Accessibility Craft is produced by Equalize Digital and hosted by Amber Hines, Chris Hines, and Steve Jones. Steve Jones composed our theme music. Learn how we help make thousands of WordPress websites more accessible at equalizeddigital.com.